Blog Talk Radio.
Are you a fan of Movie Geeks United and wonder how you can show your support? Consider making a donation to help keep the show going strong. Donate as much or as little as you'd like. We've even made it possible for you to schedule recurring donations on a monthly basis. Help us keep providing the great thought-provoking content and filmmaker interviews you've come to love. Visit our website at moviegeeksunited.net to find out how you can become a Movie Geeks United supporter. Want to listen to the latest movie books, including this year's Oscar-nominated The Wolf of Wall Street? Movie Geeks United has teamed up with Audible.com, the leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the Internet, to make you a movie insider. Choose the audio versions of your favorite books with a library of over 150,000 titles to choose from. You can purchase them individually, or for real savings, you can sign up for an Audible Listener Program, which gives you book credits each month for a low monthly fee. Download your choices and access them on your PC, burn them onto CDs, or upload them to iPods or other MP3 devices. It's quick, easy, fun, and affordable entertainment, and it's all yours if you go to audibletrial.com/moviegeeksunited. All right, it is Oscar night. We are mere hours away from Hollywood's biggest night of the year, the 86th Annual Academy Awards. And as we always do every year, this is an opportunity to present everyone with a live Movie Geeks United episode where we'll give you our last-minute predictions and we'll talk about what we'll expect from the evening, and we'll even play some of our interviews with some of the nominees this year. Gentlemen, how are you guys?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm very good.
Yes, I'm excellent. Good to be here.
Are you guys in tuxes?
I'm very casual. I'm very casual. I mean, not Jeff Bridges Lebowski casual, but I'm casual though.
I'm in a jersey tuxedo, which would be a wife beater.
Oh, good. That's a nice image.
That is a wonderful image.
Actually,
wow.
Actually, it's not true. I'm not in a wife beater. I'm just in a normal t-shirt, but I thought that would be funny.
I prefer to think of you in a wife beater. Okay. First question of the night, I want to talk about what you guys expect from the actual ceremony. Ellen DeGeneres is hosting for the second time, and she has made it clear that she'll be working the audience, as what she did last time she hosted, too. She'll walk into the audience and really interact with a lot of the people out there. I like Ellen DeGeneres very much. What are you guys expecting?
Well, I think I like her. I think she did a good job. I mean, I think she's – I hear people have been, you know, aren't crazy about her as a host. I think she's done a pretty good job. So I have – that's actually like – I don't expect her to do – she's good at this. She's really good at this type of thing. She does a good job on her daytime talk show. So I don't really expect her to be at fault here. So that's the least of my worry.
You're already thinking – you don't expect her to be at fault, so you're already expecting to kind of assess blame somewhere?
Oh, there'll be blame.
Every year.
It'll be blame because it is one of the worst produced shows, I think, that I've – I mean, it really – it's a wretched show. It's really wretched. So let's just hope – I mean, we do kind of hope there'll be outbursts. We really do hope there'll be some sort of disorder, some sort of chaos or something, because it is a – it's a really – if you think about it just from a production, from a show standpoint – it's a horrible show.
Tell me what's wrong with the actual show in your mind.
It is. I really only have to go back as far as when Jon Stewart hosted it, and you would think that Jon Stewart would have been one of the great hosts of the show, that he would be asked back, but he wasn't. They are so smug. They are so insular. They are so wrapped up in themselves. In one sense, it should be the greatest night of this industry, the greatest night of the year. And it always just comes across as like, it does come across as self-congratulatory shit.
That's what any award show is, a self-congratulatory.
Oh, it is. It is. But I just think it's a really bad show. But this is what I'm thinking. This is where my guns are aimed at the memoriams, the in memoriam segment that, you know, is who is going to be left out.
Why?
Who is going to be left out? I don't think, you know, a lot of people say, oh, this is my Super Bowl. No, it's not my Super Bowl. Actually, I have to be very honest. Since I don't have a movie up or I'm not, you know, my interest as I've gotten older, it has really dwindled on this. And it's dwindled because I think, you know, part of the reason is we talked about this in the snubs. When we talk about snubs, you have 10 pitchers that you can nominate. You only nominate 9. You have one of the best years in recent memory, and you can only fill 9 of them. There's not another movie you could put in that 10th slot. I already have issues with that.
Here's what I think. In all honesty and fairness, I think that when you look at the specifics, the Oscars are a bunch of BS.
Yes,
but mm-hmm. but because the what makes up the Academy and what we keep hearing about that they sometimes don't actually watch the movies and there's not enough of a widespread of films that are recognized, and you can go on and on and on. But regardless of all of that, there's something ingrained in me, and I think a lot of people that love movies and the Oscars that find magic, like Oscar night. Like, I'm always so excited, and I don't want anyone talking during the ceremony. It gets me. It like always does.
Right. Of course, I understand that, and I'm not making light of that. I think what I'm making light of is though, it just seems like it. Something always goes wrong. Although I didn't think, was last year, who hosted last year?
It was Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah.
Oh, and people hated that. I mean, I was talking to someone at one of my jobs. People hated it. And, you know, look, when you ask Seth MacFarlane to host your Oscars, you should know what you're getting. I mean,
it was a bad decision anyway.
Dean, let me ask you this. Can I ask you a question, Dean, real quick?
Yeah.
Isn't hosting the Oscars one of the most thankless jobs? I mean, can't you really not win? I mean, the stacks are stacked against you. The odds are stacked against you.
I just think that they have to find a specific kind of host. And I believe that Ellen DeGeneres is that kind of host, that sort of person that is obviously an insider but feels like an outsider or acts like one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same thing. You remember Bob Hope and Johnny Carson both? Well, Carson didn't have a dog in the hunt as far as movies went, so he was kind of an outsider. But also, Bob Hope was sort of successful because he always complained that he was never going to get an Oscar and all that kind
right.
of stuff. So that mm-hmm. was the kind of the ongoing joke.
But they
there.
Were perfect. They were
yeah,
perfect
and,
hosts.
I feel like Ellen hits that mark as well. We'll get more confirmation of that tonight. So I don't think that it's a completely impossible and thankless task. And also, you know, Billy Crystal was great in his time, of course, but he was a true insider. So, I mean,
yeah. Why wasn't Letterman or why wasn't Stewart? Because Stewart certainly.
I don't know. I think Letterman, for instance, was kind of scuttled by. I know this sounds ridiculous for somebody like Letterman, but I think that he was scuttled by nerves. Kind of a little bit, but you know, I mean, there've all been other successful hosts too. I mean, I kind of like Whoopi Goldberg. I think she did an okay job. She was funny, and Then they get, sometimes they try to get too edgy, and I don't think this is the show for edgy.
See, yeah.
No,
that's the
irony.
That's the big drawback. That's the big drawback, because this is as establishment as it gets, this award show.
Yeah.
So if you're too kind of offbeat, which is what Letterman was, and I think that's why he didn't really register. Or if you're too aggressive, which many people thought that Seth MacFarlane and Chris Rock were, then it doesn't quite fit with the format, like the tried and true Oscar format.
Right.
Yeah, you gotta walk, Chris Rock is a good example. You have to walk like a kind of a tightrope between being jokey about the ceremony and like saying, hey, it doesn't really mean a whole lot, and also being very reverent. It's a difficult job, but I don't think it's a thankless one.
No, I don't know if it's thankless.
I just think in recent years they've tried to goose up the ratings because we're increasingly more of a profit oriented society anyway. But also they're trying to build that museum, so they're trying to get as much money as they can to do these things that they're doing. And one of the ways that they've been trying to do it is messing with the formula, seeing what works and what doesn't work.
We'll talk a little bit more about the formula. We'll talk about more about the formula in a little bit. But first, I want to play a clip. This is a great guy. He's, in my opinion, he's the greatest Los Angeles tour guide ever. I can't see how anyone would be better. I took one of his tours this last trip I took there, and he's like Mr. L.A., and he has a YouTube channel, Brian Donnelly is his name, so you can look him up on YouTube, where he's posting these Oscar minutes. They're like video segments where he's showing you how they prepare for the big day. And there's a lot of surprising stuff in there, and I wanted to play one clip of it to give you a sense of what the environment is there outside of what the cameras are picking up tonight during the red carpet. So here's Brian in a little video segment of his.
Now, during the Academy Awards, Hollywood Boulevard is closed from Vine coming across all the way across past Orange. And you line up here at Cherokee where they have the security checkpoint. And you have to go through all of this right here, and they have the mirrors. They go underneath. They're searching for bombs or searching for anything. They're just making sure that security is really, really tight here. We're here on McAdam, and we're going to go down here through the back alley. This is the old Scientology building, the old Christie Hotel. They've gotten a kind of a little cottage industry because they know that people have to funnel through here, so they've got things set up here where they start their little bacon-wrapped hot dogs. The bacon-wrapped hot dog, by the way, if you didn't know this, it was named the hot dog of the city. They actually made a charter or something like that where they voted on it. So while you're watching ABC and watching on the news or whatever, you see the helicopters, you see the Goodyear blimp. Here's what you don't see. You don't see the sharpshooters. You don't see the other security. And if you look here, just on top, right on top of the Max Factor building, there's two guys posted up there.
Yeah, so his camera picks up the sharpshooters on top of the building.
Sharpshooters at the top.
Yeah, no lie. They're up there with rifles and stuff. I mean, that's something you don't think about.
Yeah, they don't have any shot for them, you know. I watched a lot of his. I watched all of his stuff on his channel, and it was extremely entertaining. So he's so good.
Yeah. I took that Hollywood Death tour with him, and he was like so entertaining and completely knowledgeable about everything. I mean, it's in his vocabulary. So check that out. DonnellyWood.com is his website, two N's, two L's, DonnellyWood.com, and you'll find a lot of really delectable stuff on there. Go ahead, Dean. What were you saying?
Yeah, I was particularly taken with one moment in one of his videos where he was standing at one particular place where he could see the Roosevelt Hotel, which is the first place that the Oscars were held. And then he could also see the Kodak Theater, and you could see the Chinese Theater, Grauman's Chinese, where I think two ceremonies were held there.
Yeah. And yeah. I thought the first place that they held the Oscars was the Pantages Theater, which is on the other end of Hollywood Boulevard. And, you know, it was just a meeting room. It was a conference room. It wasn't, you know, theater. But yeah, a major history there that you'll find. So, I want to talk about last-minute thoughts on predictions in just a moment, and we're going to play a series of five clips with five of the Oscar nominees from tonight that we've done interviews with in the past couple of months. But first, we got on the topic of the format of the show. Now, the format is kind of unavoidable in a large sense because there's something like 24 categories, and it's not like the Grammys where they have 100 categories and they give a lot of them out, you know, outside of the actual ceremony.
Right,
they
right.
give out all 24 during the ceremony. You wouldn't recommend changing that, would you?
I would try to make it shorter, though. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you try to make it shorter, though, or condense it in some ways? I mean,
well, I think all the fat in it are all the musical performances that don't have anything to do with that particular year, or you know, and then the monologues, the opening 15 minutes. I mean, you can point at certain fat on it, but
I wouldn't get rid of the monologue. I would definitely get rid of. I mean, it seems that the montages are not popular. It seems that they are not popular with certain segments.
I like the
Team
America montage.
I'll tell you what I think should be cut, really. You know how they go to, all through the night, they go to Best Picture, they go to each nominee for Best Picture and host a little clip kind of thing for it?
Yeah.
And they have
an actor
there talking
heartbeat.
About it. They should get rid of that. I mean, that takes up 10 minutes right there. So,
well, yeah, I get rid of that. If you don't know what's nominated or you don't know what the film's about, you know, get lost.
Just
get,
save
go
all
home.
That stuff for the end, you know. Save it for the end. And also, they should pick clips. Never show a clip that's like a trailer. And also, Don't show the same clip that we've seen a thousand times before. Like, show something different.
Yeah, exactly. But there's also the special musical tributes, and I understand that this is a big event. They want to hype it up as a big event. They want it to be a must-see thing, and mm-hmm. sometimes that means that you want to book like unique talent that are doing something that they haven't done before. So tonight they're doing, for whatever reason, they're paying tribute to The Wizard of Oz, 1939 movie. Maybe it's like, what is it? What is that, the 75th anniversary of Wizard of Oz this year?
It will be this year.
Do we really need that, though?
So they're doing it with Judy Garland's children are coming up. And I guess Liza Minnelli will sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
She's going to sing. I think she is. And will there be booze before during the segment?
There'll be booze in her glass that she's holding while she's drinking it.
That's the funniest thing you've ever said, dude.
Will there be booze? I mean, Liza Minnelli and the Garland kids are going to be there. I mean, they're all going to be, you know, please. I mean, that would be exciting. Hell, I would set the DVR for that.
I thought when you said booze, I thought you meant people going, boo, boo.
No, I meant alcohol. I mean, they're Garlands. They have that in their DNA, you know. I mean, come on.
Okay, all right.
Wow, we're really the Wizard of Oz? That's what we're celebrating tonight?
But that's not even the theme of the show. The theme of the show, apparently, is movie heroes. So there's going to be lots of other segments where they're talking about movie heroes. Or maybe they'll be the one segment like they did with Bond last year. I don't understand it.
Oh, and that was – and you know, I love Bond and everything. That was – I mean, when they do these segments and there's such a build-up to them and then you watch them, you're just like, really? This is what you guys are talking about?
The actual presentation of Bond wasn't very special at all last year. But hearing Shirley Bassey come out and sing –
Oh, no, that was great.
That was tremendous.
Awesome, but – I'm sorry, I hate to say this, but, like, you know, the planning that they make, you hear about it, and then when you watch it, you're like, hell, my sixth grade class could have done a better job of that. You know, I mean, come on. I mean,
I think that one of the other problems with the Oscar show is that it is controlled to the nth degree. And there's absolutely no room made for anything wild to happen. All wildness is kind of shunted out of it, and it's all kind of planned wildness. So it takes some of the juice out of the show.
Liveness.
You know?
It takes the liveness.
Yeah, no, of course it does. I mean, that goes without saying. It's ironic that it is for such a, you know, you're celebrating all this creativity and it is so controlled, so meticulous. I mean, it's embarrassing, I think. But that's just me. I mean,
well, I don't have any kind of, I enjoy it for its, all of its faults and its pluses as well. You know, like I just dig it, you know, I dig it mainly for just the historical aspect of it.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing that you bring up. That's a great thing that you actually bring up about the historical nature of it. Do you think, I mean, tonight history could very well be made. And will be made, especially in the when it comes to director. I mean, you know, that's going to be a big thing tonight. I'm gathering it's going to be McQueen or Alfonso Cuarón, so that's going to be a huge deal. Let's not make small about that, but that's going to be, I think, where history will be made tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
and possibly screenwriting too.
Possibly in Best Picture, you know, possibly in Supporting Actress if Jennifer Lawrence gets it, because she'd be the youngest two-time Oscar winner in history. Possibly for documentary, if Act of Killing gets it, because, it might help shed a little bit more light on the whole Indonesian genocide problem. With McConaughey, you know, with McConaughey probably going to win, that's sort of historical too, in the sense that he's another person that sort of turned his career around in a major way. So, I don't know. I mean, there's always little bits of history that are interesting to film lovers and everything. Let me do this.
I want to talk a little bit after this segment. We'll talk about some of our last minute predictions and what we think might be the surprises. But first, I want to play the first of our five Oscar nominee interview clips. This is with Best Cinematography nominee Bruno Debonnel, who is nominated for his work filming Inside Llewyn Davis. This was a unique case for the Coen brothers because their regular DP is Roger Deakins. Deakins was unavailable, so they had to choose a replacement for him, so they chose Debonnel, and Inside Llewyn Davis is an exquisite-looking movie. And ironically enough, Roger Deakins is also nominated in this category this year for Prisoners, right alongside Debonnel. So here's a brief clip of Debonnel talking about that dynamic of working with the Coen brothers for a first time as a very different DP for them.
Yeah, I'm just expecting now, since I did Inside Llewyn Davis with the Coen brothers, yeah, it's going to be about Roger Deakins sooner or later. You know, even at Cannes Film Festival, you know, the first question at the press conference was how was it to work with Bruno after you've done 12 or 14 movies with Roger Deakins? You know, that's the first question they had at the press conference. And they didn't ask it to me. They asked it to the Coen brothers. So, but it's Roger Deakins would have shot Inside Llewyn Davis. It would be a different movie, and that's it, period. And Roger is a fantastic cinematographer, and I was scared when I started this movie because he's. I have to fit big shoes, you know, so just to fill big shoes. And I felt uncomfortable at the very beginning, and then I forgot about it. I said, you know, I'm just doing what I think is right for this movie. That's it, period. And it kind of worked. You know, Joel and Ethan were really happy with what I've done.
Okay, that was Best Cinematography nominee Bruno Del Bonel. He's up this year for Inside Llewyn Davis. His next movie that he shot is Tim Burton's Big Eyes, which he was in the process of shooting when we did that interview earlier in the year. Okay, this, my thought is, and Dean, I was sharing this with you last night, that this is like the first time in a long time that I can remember the Best Picture race being so tight. I honestly think Gravity and 12 Years a Slave are neck and neck, and it could go either way. Do you agree, Jerry?
Yeah, I do. I think it's between those two. I really do.
Doesn't this really make you want to see? Doesn't it really make you want to see the voting totals to see how far apart they were? Whichever one wins tonight.
Yeah, like, I would like to see that, but I do think it's between those two. I there's some people who say American Hustle might get it, but I don't see that happening now. I do see it being one of those two. That would be an upset if it's not one of those two.
Yeah. Let me take a phone caller. I think Owen's on the phone. Owen, are you there?
Hello?
Hey, Owen.
Hey.
What you got to say about the Oscars tonight?
I have no idea what is going to happen.
Well, that's fair enough. No
okay.
idea?
No, not really.
Are you
Are you excited about it?
Are you pulling for anybody?
12 Years a Slave.
For Best Picture?
Yeah.
Okay. Who do you want to win? Who do you want to win? Actor.
Chiwetel.
Okay. So 12 years all the all the way. I think Lupita's going to win. I think that's a sure bet.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well,
yeah.
It's like the first award, so we'll know straight away for sure, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in terms of the actual ceremony, like, what are you most looking forward to?
Probably, I don't know really. What are you
looking
forward to?
But you'll be watching it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you guys this: what could be particular upsets tonight? What might upset? Thank you, Owen, for your call.
Best Actor is the one big upset that I think might happen. Saying that, I still think that DiCaprio has a shot here, and and if he does win, it would be a shocker, no question about it. But it's possible, I think that's the biggest possibility we're going to have for a major upset. Also, maybe in screenplay, maybe Philomena overtaking 12 Years a Slave, adapted screenplay, and maybe also in supporting actress too, with Lawrence taking Nyong'o's place. But all of those would be shocking.
They would be shocking. What about? Is there any chance you think Dern could take it from? It's a very slim chance. At the beginning of the season, I would have said Dern was a sure thing.
If Dern won, it would be an Adrian Brody moment, except in reverse, because he'd be the older version of that. But that's the kind of moment that would be, because that would be completely unexpected.
Of months ago, it wouldn't have been,
I really do think it's McConaughey front runner. And Chiwetel and Leo probably neck and neck right behind. That's the sense I get. But Leo Leo's gotten a lot of traction in the past couple of weeks because he's really been working the Academy. He's been doing a lot of events with them and a lot of interviews and that kind of stuff.
Also, just on taking out the politics and the campaigning and all that, It is a tour de force performance. He is the movie. You don't have a movie without him. He really is.
Oh, yeah.
This is the performance of his life, if you really want to I mean, this is what, you know, when they talk about, this is really going to be one of his truly great, great, great performances that they're,
he's
going to be remembered
the
for.
The other thing going for him is that he's been nominated several times,
mm-hmm.
and the industry genuinely likes him because he's good for the industry. He's good business for the industry.
Right.
They might think it's time for him, whereas McConaughey,
right.
We feel like he's just started this really great, serious track in his career.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they think, well, McConaughey's time will be another year. I mean, that could be thinking.
He'll get an Emmy next year.
You can easily
ahead,
see
Dean.
That happening, you know. Also, I wanted to mention also, you know, an original song, you know, I think, you know, there's a little bit of a horse race there between the song from Frozen and the song from Despicable Me, the Pharrell Williams, Happy. So there's a possibility there might be.
I listened to both of them the other day, and, I mean, Happy is such a great, catchy tune, obviously. And then the Frozen song, I understand why it works, but that's very typically Broadway, and maybe that's the kind of song that the Academy would most like to award. But
right.
I mean, you can see every aspiring Broadway actress taking their turn at that song. It's just like one of those songs.
Yes, that's true. We'll be hearing it on the American Idol watchers will be hearing it ad nauseum.
Probably.
Yeah. Right.
All
yeah.
Right, the red carpet's going on right now. They just showed Olivia Wilde with Jason Sudeikis, and Bruce Dern has arrived. Bruce Dern with his wife, and he has another seat for his nose hair. Have you noticed that, Jerry?
Yeah.
How Bruce Dern trims that nose hair.
It made sense for him to have all that nose hair in the movie, but maybe not on the award circuit.
It's like he's smuggling Sasquatch into the circuit.
Right.
Okay, let's go through some of these other categories, which might be difficult to determine. Best documentary. This is always difficult to determine. There is
mm-hmm.
rarely a very sure thing in this category, because even if you think it's a sure thing, a lot of times they'll give it to someone completely unexpected. So this
uh-huh.
year is The Act of Killing, Cutie and the Boxer, Dirty Wars, The Square, 20 Feet from Stardom. Now, the race would seem to be between The Act of Killing and 20 Feet from Stardom. I think 20 Feet from Stardom has the edge, but
mm-hmm.
The Square has also gained a lot of traction as of late.
It's mm-hmm. too topical. It's too topical. I'm going to say, let's just say Cutie and the Boxer. I'm not being facetious when I say that, because
I'm laughing because that's probably true.
Oscars are not topical. They're topical two or three years later, but they're never topical at the moment. Never.
Remember, your original prediction in this, Jerry, was 20 Feet from Stardom, and that's not a topical movie either.
No,
so,
it's not. So I do think that, I do think 20 Feet from Stardom is the, but it's also the crowd pleaser, too. That's
mm-hmm.
the problem, though. It is
this is another point that I thought of the other night when I was doing mm-hmm. Jason's Oscar show, is that, the best documentary last year I was so pleased with, because I so love Searching for Sugar Man, and that won. But if 20 Feet from Stardom wins this year, that'll be 2 years in a row that a crowd-pleasing musical documentary.
Right. Mm-hmm. True. That's very true. If The Act of Killing got it, that would be extraordinary. I don't see Dirty Wars getting it.
But The Act of Killing,
The
Act of Killing feels too vicious and revolutionary for them, for the
mm-hmm.
older Academy voters to vote on. Am I wrong about that, Dean? Or?
No, you're not.
I agree. I think that it would be a definitely I'm still picking Act of Killing, but I definitely agree. It's a tough movie for people to watch. So yes, it wouldn't be the first thing on the stack. It'll be the last thing on the stack that they're going to want to watch if they're like, I'm just not ready to watch this. But
let's talk about the pros and cons of Best Picture. Now, because we mentioned that it's neck and neck between 12 Years and Gravity, probably with a very outside chance of an American Hustle sneaking in. But what is the main thing running against 12 Years a Slave winning Best Picture, do you think? Why would they give it to Gravity instead of 12 Years?
Well, just the fact that Gravity is going to, it's probably going to take the majority of the technical awards. I think that there's a possibility that those people who chose it as the number one in those categories will just end up saying, well, obviously it should win. And when it gets to Best Picture, obviously Gravity should win. It just won five or six others. So that's the big thing that's standing in 12 Years a Slave's way, you know.
Do you think another big thing is people talking about not seeing it or not wanting to see it?
Yes, there's that as well, you know, people who were not ready to experience the films, you know. The film's pretty overwhelming.
Another thing that makes them neck and neck is that they tie it at the PGA, right? And that's oftentimes, the majority of times, a major predictor of what will win Best Picture. But at the same time, Gravity was not nominated for screenplay, Dean, as you've brought up before, and that's a major indicator of who will win Best Picture. They're usually always up for Best Screenplay as well.
Yeah. It's very rare that you know Best Picture winner is not nominated for screenplay. So I mean that, and also what could be standing in Gravity's way is the sense that it's just not an Oscar type movie with it being, I know people don't like to call it a science fiction movie, but it is a science fiction movie because it's fiction and it has science in it, so it's science fiction.
I would like to say something about both of these movies. I have no desire to ever watch either one of them again. I like both of them very much, but there's no reason to revisit either of them. Gravity was fine. I saw it in 3D. I didn't see it in the IMAX, and I'm not going to obviously see it in the IMAX now. It was great. It was a great movie-going experience. Fine. Boom. Done. I'm not going to get seeing anything out of it, go watching it on cable or DVD or whatever. 12 Years a Slave, it's brutal. It's awesome. But like Steve McQueen's two previous very good films, I just don't want to sit through it again. It was great. I got everything I needed out of it. But these are going to be the case of two best picture winners that have no rewatchable quality for me whatsoever. None.
Yeah, I definitely agree with 12 Years a Slave and its rewatchability. I have watched it a second time, and it's just it's tough the second time, too. I mean,
yeah.
But, man, I tell you what, I really get into, you know, how McQueen makes it that way, you know.
No, but he did that with Hunger, too. Hunger is a brilliant film, but I don't want to sit through it again. Shame, maybe not so brilliant, but I still don't want to sit through it again. I got everything I needed. It's not like, hey, I want to watch that scene where, you know, Michael Fassbender does this. No, I get it. I got it. But with 12 Years a Slave, it is so brutal that I really don't want to sit through it again. Maybe in a couple of years, maybe. But I was thinking about that the other day. These are two films. Now, here's the other problem. There are two films in these nine films I do want to watch again, The Wolf of Wall Street and American Hustle, and I don't know what that says about me.
Well, I just think you like that style of film, you know, but, you know, those both have similar styles to them and similar themes. They're both about con men, and they're both, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what that says about you either, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean,
I mean, I think they're – I call them how-to films. They're how-to films.
I think that Wolf of Wall Street is going to end up being the best picture, and Her are going to be the two best picture.
Oh, yeah,
Her is
another one, yeah.
That are like eminently rewatchable in the future. Yeah.
Okay, I want to go through some lists tonight as we're doing this thing, little Oscar trivia lists. And these were provided to us by our good listener, Jason Warner.
I got these too. He's a good guy. I talked to him last night. Great guy. I love him. Very nice. Sure. Very, you know, very cordial. And I talked to him online. Just a wonderful human being.
So here's a list that he sent us, 20 celebrated filmmakers who never won an Oscar.
Hmm.
So tonight, it's either going to be Caron or McQueen, probably. One of them will go home with the Oscar. But here are legendary directors that never have. Stanley Kubrick never won an Oscar for Best Director. He won for – what did he win for? He won for 2001 Visual Effects. He was part of
the visual,
team for that. Alfred Hitchcock never won. Alfred Hitchcock, actually, in America at least, was not very celebrated at all in terms of award achievement. For
right.
Years. Even critics awards. So, but he did win an honorary though.
Like he won Thalberg. He won the Thalberg. Yeah.
In 68, he won the Thalberg. Orson Welles. He was, obviously he was never appreciated. That's the great tragedy of Orson Welles.
He never won one as a director. Now, hold on a minute. He never won one as a director, but he did win for the screenplay along with Herman Mankiewicz for Susan Cain, and he did win an honorary Oscar in the 70s.
This is a list of directors who never won Best Director.
Okay.
Robert Altman never won Best Director, one of the greatest, most distinctive directors ever.
Keep going.
Sidney Lumet, one of the greats, never won.
Mm-hmm.
He did win an honorary award in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Hawks, never won Best Director.
You're giving three right now. They just show you how BS this whole thing is, you know.
Charlie Chaplin, never won a directing award.
Yeah, right there. Mm-hmm.
All of these guys eventually
did win... Mm-hmm.
Nor was he ever nominated for Best Director.
No, that's not true.
What was he nominated for?
Great Dictator? He wasn't nominated for Great Dictator?
He had three Oscars, but none of them were from directing. One was for score, and the two others were honorary.
That's true. That's definitely, he won those.
Sergio Leone, and never nominated.
Yeah, that makes sense, though, because he was not really. I got to say this about Sergio Leone: he was never really. It's only after his death that you see his influence and you see the filmmakers speaking up, because he was not well respected, at least not in this country, by critics and things. That came later.
Same thing with Hitchcock. They were considered makers of popular films, or in Leone's case, maybe more culty popular films.
Exploitation almost. Exploitation, if you really want to go with in Leone's case. I mean,
Another director that never won Best Director, Ernst Lubitsch. He was nominated three times, but he did get an honorary award in 1947. Cecil B. DeMille never won Best Director. He was nominated once for The Greatest Show on Earth in that category.
And why that film, I don't understand.
He won for being its producer, too, that year.
Akira Kurosawa, absolutely, probably, I think Kurosawa stands next to Hitchcock as the most influential of all filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. He was nominated for Ran in 1985. But he never won.
You couldn't think to nominate him before that for for Stray Dog, High and Low, The Hidden Fortress, there's so many you could have nominated, and you couldn't think to nominate. Okay, go on. This is getting very interesting.
Stanley Kramer, nominated in the category three times, never won. But the same year that he was nominated for Nuremberg, which was 1961, he was awarded the honorary Oscar. Fritz Lang. No Best Director nominations for Fritz Lang.
And no honorary Oscar for him either. that's a real shocker.
Yeah.
Now this gentleman has won more foreign language Oscars than anyone else. He's been nominated 3 times for Best Director, but never won Best Director, and that's Fellini.
And that's criminal. That's criminal right there. If you know, 8.5 is probably the, you know, we always is one of the most important movies made about movies, and you're not going to recognize him out. Of course, we give him an honorary Oscar, right? In the late 80s, early 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 93.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're not going to recognize this guy. You've got issues. You got issues
and
about everyone before.
Especially considering that 8.5 was clearly the best movie of that year. So,
right.
I mean, like, it is mind-boggling that they don't have
a great track record with nominating foreign film directors. I mean, I think they think that they just take care of that in the actual foreign film category.
Yeah. Until recently, with Ang Lee or someone, they've gotten better about that. But no, for the most part, they suck.
But they have to make a film in English. I mean, there's never been, you know, even the artists, you know, they had to do it, you know, and they had to do it as a silent movie to get a foreign film to win.
Right.
Another one that never won a Best Director Oscar is Sam Peckinpah. He was also never nominated in the category. He was nominated for screenplay for The Wild Bunch.
Right. So not even for Ride the High Country, which I find mind-boggling. But no, look, he was a bad boy. They were never going to nominate him. And I think his reputation always preceded him, and he was. And it doesn't matter. I mean, his influence is all over the place. But there's no – I mean, I can see why they wouldn't nominate him, but what about Ride the High Country? What about The Ballad of Cable Hawley? I mean, there are
couple
films that –
You have to remember that Ride the High Country, in the year that it came out, it was basically a B picture. I mean, like literally on the B list of a double feature.
Well, of course. I mean, it goes without saying. I mean –
It's not surprising that they didn't nominate it that year because it didn't have a very high profile, and it's only been in later years, like, you know, it's been raised up. And also with Peckinpah too, like, everybody just his reputation for being a violent director in an era where the violence was shocking was probably something that kept him from getting up there.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, but
now they were
think
concerned. I'm watching the red carpet. They were concerned that there was going to be rain, that it was going to storm there. It's pretty sunny there right now, at least it looks like it. And Lupita Nyong'o just walked out of her limo, and she's wearing a really beautiful kind of, I can't believe I'm talking about fashion. She's wearing a really beautiful baby blue kind of really open dress. She looks really pretty. Ingmar Bergman never won Best Director. He was nominated in the category twice, and 3 of his films won Best Foreign Film.
Right.
Jean-Luc Godard never won Best Director. Honorary Oscar in 2011.
Bergman got an honorary Oscar too, by the way, in the 70s, I think. Right.
Okay. Otto Preminger, number one.
Was he nominated, though? Let me ask you that. Was he ever nominated, though?
Yeah,
he was nominated
twice.
For Laura and for
Laura and
Anatomy of a Murder.
No,
oh,
and
the Cardinal, okay.
Yeah. Arthur Penn never won Best Director.
Wow.
Nominated 3 times in the category. For Miracle Worker, Bonnie and Clyde, and Alice's Restaurant.
Also somebody who never won an honorary Oscar.
Yeah, that's criminal. He was like an industry staple. I mean,
industry staple, and Bonnie and Clyde is such a, you know, sea change of a film, as we talked about on the show many years ago. It's really a shame.
He's why we have so much violence in movies today. They should have given him the award just for that. Cassavetes, number one, nominated once in the category for A Woman Under the Influence. That's no big surprise. I mean, in terms of Maverick, Altman and Cassavetes are as Maverick as it gets.
Yeah.
Amongst American
films. If he hadn't died as young as he did, I think they probably would have gotten around to giving him an honorary Oscar. But yeah. But you know what's interesting about Cassavetes is he's one of the few, one of that pantheon of directors that's gotten nominated as an actor, as a writer, and as a director. But for three different movies. For writer, he was nominated for Faces, and for acting, he was nominated for supporting actor for Dirty Dozen.
Right.
But I think that's an interesting stat.
Okay, let me play a clip real quick. This is the second clip we're going to play of our Oscar nominee interviews that we've done throughout the year. We just recently had a conversation with another Best Cinematography nominee, Fedden Papa Michael, who is up for his work on Nebraska. And here's what he had to say about the community amongst cinematographers and what he thinks about one of the other nominees he's up against tonight.
I mean, I've seen probably almost everything this year. Of course, my fellow nominees, I mean, Chivo Emmanuel Lubezki, I'm a big fan of his for, you know, decades since Little Princess, when he sort of broke out as some amazing talent, and just also the way he's developed and his range from Y Tu Mamá También to Gravity. I mean, talk about, you know, being able to apply himself to different stories. And Roger Deakins, you know, been a fan of his since Sid and Nancy, you know.
Okay, that was just a brief 30 seconds of our, you know, half-hour conversation with him. He's up for Nebraska, which I think that category is pretty close to a lock with Lubezki for Gravity. I mean, that movie's just too boundary-pushing not to win all the technical, right? Oh, hang on. I'm sorry, guys. I have you muted. Hang on. I got you. I'm bringing you up. Sorry.
It's pretty... It's pretty clear he's going to win, and that's great because I still think he was robbed for the award back with Tree of Life. So
right.
So it'd be nice to see and Children of Men, frankly. So for those two movies alone, you know, I'd say I'm glad
Mark
to see
Mark
him win.
Mark McGilligott wrote us and said, "I love the show. I'm listening to you guys as I watch the red carpet. Thanks for a great podcast." Thank you, Mark. He's listening right now. So another category to talk about. Obviously, the technicals are going to go for Gravity. Let's talk about this. This really kind of fascinates me, that Great Gatsby could possibly win two awards tonight for costume design and production design. Do you think that's going to happen? I mean, I didn't expect Great Gatsby to be a two-time Oscar winner, but those two categories are kind of undeniable how strong they are for that film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think visually you would have to give a lot of consideration to Gatsby, even though it's not a satisfying film. Visually, though, it is, you know, it has all that going for it. And I do think you would, and we had even, I think, predicted, all of us, I think, had agreed on Gatsby, if I'm not mistaken, would win these categories.
I just want to give you guys an update. Bruce Dern has trimmed his nose hair. Because I'm looking at it right now.
From Friday night? Okay.
This is a Bruce Dern nose hair alert.
Okay.
He's
smelling the world for the first time. It's like, wow, it's old.
And he's there. He seems to be there with his wife, and his daughter Laura Dern is with him. So it's a good family for him to.
That's good.
Okay, so Dean, do you think Great Gatsby will take it in both categories or not?
I'm sticking with production design, but I'm starting to think, you know, more and more that American Hustle will have a second. I still think American Hustle is going to win best original screenplay because they want to give something to David O. Russell. But I think that the voters might look at costume design as another way to reward that film. So
right.
I'm starting to think that I'm switching my prediction over to American Hustle for that, even though I think that the reason to watch Great Gatsby is for its set design and costume design,
mm-hmm.
like the major reason. So, but you can't deny that the one thing that everybody is talking about in American Hustle, whether you like the movie or not, you have to admit that, you know, the fashions in it were incredibly accurate and
right.
also incredibly entertaining. So.
And that's a good thing to bring up, American Hustle, because we don't always, you know, when we think of this category, we do think of Gatsby, but we can't forget that American Hustle, by today's standards, is a period piece. You know, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have even said that, but now, 40 years later, yeah, it's a period piece. So that's a very good...
Well, we were talking about this the other night. I mean, costume design seems to go. I mean, there's kind of a rule of thumb where the earlier the time period, the greater chance it has of winning costume design. I think when people think of the 70s, they think, well, just go to Goodwill and pick up.
There's that. I mean, that's true. Well, let me ask you a question. The earlier
the
time,
not true.
What about Quest for Fire? Did Quest for Fire get costume design?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We got a makeup design, not a costume design. But I mean, you can't go to Goodwill and get that stuff anymore. I mean, like, you know,
every hipster has got that stuff. You know, they're going there.
I went to Goodwill, and I'm wearing Amy Adams' dress right now. Actually, there are places...
That is an image I really did not want, but okay.
Actually, when I was in L.A., I went to a lot of the kind of... vintage and Goodwill type stores that sold secondhand movie costumes. Like, so they had like all the costumes that they had to get rid of for movies like Doubt and, you know, I mean, name a movie, they had them. And you would think that a place like that in Hollywood would be high end, but it is just like a Goodwill. Like, you walk in and you smell mothballs, and it feels slightly not clean, and you're looking through used clothes. I mean,
but they're all for movies. These things? What are the prices on something like that? I mean,
too much, especially for something like, you know, this is Bruce Springsteen's jacket, or, you know, there are a lot of collectors' kinds of items in those stores. There's a couple of places
right.
there that sell great vintage movie clothes, but I always thought that was interesting, and I tried a couple of them, and I wasn't really charmed by it, but anyway, that's what that is.
That's funny. By the way, I think that you're going to see like an influence from American Hustle on even tonight's fashion on the red carpet and everything. I think you're going to see a lot of those plunging necklines and stuff like Amy Adams
mm-hmm.
had stuff. So that's just further proof of like the movie's influence on where things are even today.
Here's a confusing thing for me. Right now on TV on the red carpet, they're showing Julie Delpy, Ethan Hawke, and Linklater. They're all attending together. That's nominated for Best Original Screenplay tonight before midnight,
mm-hmm.
which was a surprising nomination to me because I thought that they kind of – a lot of that kind of stuff they made up as they went along. Was I wrong about that?
No, you're wrong.
Okay.
That's meticulously written out.
Okay. Because I remember
yeah.
him talking about the first movie, and he had a script, and Ethan Hawke says, we got to change this whole thing. And they said, well, we'll change whatever you want on the fly. We'll just kind of make it
right.
up as we go along.
That might be the way the first one went, but from what I understand, the rest of them are, I don't know. That screenplay was not – it being chosen was not surprising to me. I wanted to bring up something. Did you guys read the article called The Nolan Effect that Mark Harris did for Grantland? It's a really great article. You know, in the sea of Oscar articles that come in this time period, this was the best one. You know, Mark Harris is the same guy who wrote that Pictures of a Revolution.
And he has a new book. He has a new book, Five Who Came Back, that was reviewed just today.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm interested in that. But this article was really great. It's subtitled, Why the Larger Best Picture Pool is Actually Shrinking the Number of Oscar Contenders. And it's on Grantland. You can
right.
search it. Just search for the Nolan Effect, which is what he calls it, because, you know, it was the Dark Knight getting 8 nominations and not making it into Best Picture that made them want to expand the roster. But what's interesting about the expansion of the roster is, as I've noticed, as Mark Harris has you know articulated, is that because there's now 10 Best Picture or 9 Best Picture nominees, what happens is they kind of soak up all the rest of the nominations, and they leave very little room for any of those little surprising nominations, like, you know, that we've had in the past years, you know, something like, you know, some actor being nominated for something that's not up for Best Picture or whatever.
Right.
So I think he makes a really good case for going back down to the 5 Best Picture nominees.
Well,
I would do that.
Like, or something like Short Term 12 or Blue is the Warmest Color from this year. I mean, the smaller – that reminds me exactly of the idea of the multiplex. You know, when they invented the multiplex, they said this will give us a whole another variety of movies. And no, it just gave us more copies of the same movie playing
on
the screens.
It means that Anchorman 2 is on 5 screens. That's what it means.
It's the same thing with the expanded Best Picture category. You know, the idea was a good one if you're going to spread the wealth to other smaller films that are deserving of recognition.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because that is something. I mean, I agree with Mark Harris. I've heard about this article. I haven't read the article, but I've heard about – and this is unfortunately very true. I would actually welcome just go back to 5 pictures because the whole idea that you were going to – since you didn't give Nolan anything the next time he made a movie, and you're not, and certainly not going to give him anything for Interstellar, I would be shocked if that happens. Just forget it. Go back to 5 pictures. But it's a very good point. Where is Short Term 12? Where is Blue is the Warmest Color? Where is Mud? Where is, you know, where are movies like
Zed
that?
Or things like that. You know, I mean, those are things. If you look at all the best actor, the acting nominations, only 3 of them come from non-Best Picture nominees.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean.
And, I don't know. Harris really lays it out and really, you know, makes a very convincing case to go back, you know.
I think especially after this year when you could have – if you can't – like I said, if you can't fill out 10 pictures in 2013, then go back to just the 5-picture thing. You guys are doing it wrong.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll return with another list in just a bit of, according to Rolling Stone, the 12 greatest performances that were never nominated for Oscars. But first, let's play another clip, the 3rd in our series of Oscar interview clips. This is with Best Makeup nominee. Jeez, I got to look up his name. I talked to the guy last week, and I – hey, God. This is terrible. Live radio. For The Lone Ranger, Joel Harlow is nominated tonight, and he won previously for his work on Star Trek. Here's what he has to say about the honor of being nominated.
The second that you find out, you know, that you're one of those lucky few that are actually nominated for an Academy Award, I mean, it's surreal. You know, I have been here before once, and it was surreal then, and you know, it doesn't get any less so, you know, being here again. You know, it's a tremendous honor, and you know, I guess the days leading up to it are, you know, you're nervous, and, you know, you're incredibly honored, and you're proud, and, you know, you just want to make sure that, or at least me, I want to make sure that, you know, my crew is acknowledged, you know, because no man is an island, and you know, certainly this film would not have been made without the help of a very talented, you know, makeup and hair department.
In a little bit, we'll be playing our interview clips from our conversations with the Best Sound Editing nominee for All Is Lost, Richard Himes, and Best Screenplay nominee, Billy Ray, who wrote Captain Phillips and a lot of great other films. But first, let's do our next list. This is, according to Rolling Stone, I guess Peter Travers maybe wrote this. The 12 greatest performances not nominated for Oscars, and maybe this will open up a good conversation. Jeff Bridges in The Big Lebowski, which still comic performances have an uphill climb with Academy.
But this film was dismissed by critics when it came out, too, and audiences. That's what I always found shocking. This was the big follow-up to Fargo, and it was ignored. I mean,
some movies have to percolate a while before they catch on. Now, keep in mind, this is a list from Rolling Stone. So these are the types of movies and performances that you would associate with Rolling Stone magazine. I can tell from these first two, at least. Because their number two is Edward Norton in Fight Club. Fight Club
I wouldn't even think that you would nominate Fight Club. It didn't register, but it just was that even in the best of times, a movie like that's not going to get a movie that is condemning, at least on the surface, consumerism, all that, is not going to get noticed by the Oscars. So sorry, it's not. That's not an Oscar caliber film. It just doesn't have what they want. It's too subversive. It's just not going to get it. Now you could hit me back and say, what about Network? And, you know, Network is very subversive, too. But I just don't see Fight Club. I never, you know, when I watch Fight Club, and you always hear people before the screening, you know, when they go see the screening, they're talking about nominations for Norton and Pitt. I'm like, what planet are you on? Really?
Yeah.
What planet are you? You know, it's a great movie and all that, but it's just not an Oscar-worthy movie. You're going to tell me those old guys, those old people, and the Academy are going to nominate Fight Club? Give me a break.
I'm watching the red carpet. Jared Leto has showed up looking like Jesus in a white tuxedo and a wine-colored bow tie, and Harrison Ford has just shown up with Calista Flockhart looking kind of gruff in a silver goatee. I would imagine Harrison Ford's there because they're talking about movie heroes. That's the theme of tonight's Oscar telecast for
and
some
he's
going to
reprise them,
some ungodly reason they're doing that as a theme.
Well, they for 42 or Ender's Game.
Their number three film is their number three performance is Reese Witherspoon for Election.
Yes,
I would
sure.
Have, now that I could see, but I just and that's a brilliant performance. But I mean,
they did nominate the screenplay that year. I really thought she was going to get in, and I still look at her winning for Walk the Line as sort of like a makeup Oscar for that. So, but yes, definitely.
Number four, they say Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights.
Nah.
This is Rolling Stone.
Yeah. It's soliloquy with the cock, though. Yeah, I mean, definitely.
Their number five is Bill Murray for Rushmore.
Yeah,
they made
up
for it in Lost in Translation. They finally nominated him, but Rushmore at the time was too, too edgy for them.
You know, I think if Bill Murray had a shot at winning an Oscar, it would have been perfect in the supporting category. Like, I could see that happening.
It would have. I mean, he was in the discussion. So, I mean, like, he was definitely in the discussion that year because he had taken a few of the Critics Awards for that performance. So,
but Critics Awards are big different. Critics Awards are big. There's a big gap between, this is what I hate when people say, oh, the critics were, no, the critics and the Academy members, two totally different
They are two different entities, but Critics Awards do set a precedent, and they get it out there that, this is an awards contender, a possibility to choose from in the pool.
And I'm not making light of Murray's performance, but I think Wes Anderson at the time, I guess it was with the Royal Tenenbaums that the Academy really took notice and then abandoned him after that film for a while. But
their number six is Naomi Watts in Mulholland Drive.
Yes, absolutely.
That would have been
their number seven. You know, I kind of like this idea. This is Rolling Stone, as I keep saying. It doesn't seem like this list is going very historical. I mean, they're not really going back very far. Because the average reader they're trying to get is, 12. But their number seven choice is Sacha Baron Cohen for Borat. That would have been, like, a really brave nomination.
I'm surprised it didn't go that way. I'm only surprised that there was going to be one that you would go with in those kind of performances. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Well,
that
they did bend over backwards and give him a screenplay nomination in lieu of a.
Well, I think that's because of that one scene where Sacha Baron Cohen bent over backwards in Borat. Their number eight. God, this is such an odd list. Their number eight is Natalie Portman in The Professional.
Oh,
that year was a
yeah.
very good year. That would have been the year that I mean I could see that. That's one of her. That is still one of her best performances. I mean,
yeah, it's true. But I don't know. That movie it doesn't hinge on the performances for me for some reason. I don't know. But
yeah,
I would have given Gary Oldman a nomination for that performance. I would have given Jean Renault.
Gary Oldman, that's one of those supporting performances that you expect every year being nominated. Like the really over the top, very colorful supporting. I mean,
that
kind
he's
of performance
great
is built
in
that.
That.
Yeah. I just don't think the movie was built for like Academy material. But
no, but it's a great movie. But I don't see it. It's not an Academy. It's not what we consider an Oscar bait movie by any stretch.
That's kind of a movie. That's also kind of a movie that garnered its cult like when. After it had been on theater screens, so
no, it got definitely picked up, in video and home video and everything.
Here's their number nine choice. Here's their number nine choice. I think this would have been a really brave choice, and it's a great performance. Christian Bale in American Psycho.
That would have been great, but I don't. Remember, that movie is more of a cult movie. That was not well received when it came out.
I think since this is Rolling Stone, pretty much all these movies are.
You're right.
Yeah.
If Peter Travers came up with this list, he's. I don't think Peter Travers came up with this because he's a.
I guess what I want to know is, do you think that these performances were deserving of a nomination? Yeah.
It's hard.
Some of them were deserved to win. I mean, like Reese Witherspoon, Naomi Watts, Jeff Bridges, all of those should have been the winners that year.
Yeah. Their number 10 is Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I still think that's one of his best performances. That's one of his greatest performances. It's one of the ones I wish he would do more comedy. I really do.
Me too.
He definitely needs to do a little bit more comedy, some comedy that actually works.
And This Must Be the Place doesn't count, okay?
Yeah, or neither does Walter Mitty, for that matter.
No, it doesn't. God, no.
Their number 11, which is absolutely 100% more than any other performance I've seen, should have been nominated, probably should have won, but definitely had the prestige and the volume, the size to be nominated. And that's Malcolm McDowell for A Clockwork Orange.
One of the most ridiculous non-winners ever, or non-nominees. He wasn't even nominated that year.
Yeah.
I mean, they went with, Topol from Fiddler on the Roof stole his...
Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay, their
Sean,
next
please
one.
Dare me.
Their next one is actually my number one choice for the one nomination, acting nomination that should have happened that never did. My own personal number one choice, and their number 12 is Anthony Perkins in Psycho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, these last two, it's really interesting. We talk about DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street. Both of these performances, Perkins and McDowell, are absolutely vital and are so important to the movie that, especially McDowell for A Clockwork Orange. I mean, it's all him. I mean, it's Kubrick, don't get me wrong, but it's McDowell. He is our unreliable narrator, we need him in every scene, for better or for worse.
Okay, we'll give some closing thoughts on the Oscars and what we expect from it tonight. Let's play a clip from sound editing nominee for his work in All Is Lost. This is Richard Himes. We did a half-hour conversation with him that we aired a few weeks ago, and he goes into a lot of the films that he worked on, including Saving Private Ryan, which I know won him an Oscar. And he did a lot of Spielberg movies and Indiana Jones and all of that kind of stuff. Here he is talking about his work on All Is Lost and his nomination for it. For the layperson just watching a movie, they assume that the sound that they're hearing was captured during that take, and rightfully so, because that's the impression that you want the moviegoer to have, that it's happening.
Exactly.
But how? What would you say is the percentage of sound that's actually captured on the take?
Well, on this particular film, they did a great job of recording. The recordists on the set were excellent. They did what they could, but of course, the film is about boats being in a storm and things, and they weren't in the storm when they were filming. Obviously, that would be insane to try and film during a storm. So all that is simulated in tanks, which have all the wrong sound for what we're looking for. So basically, despite the fact that they did a very good job of recording, probably 95% of it or more was not really usable. There were a few things that were used here and there, but most of it was inappropriate, either wasn't loud enough or distinct enough to cut through the storm or whatever else was going on. The quiet lapping of the waves were recorded, but J.C. Chander, the director, quite rightly so, realized that the sound really wasn't very important to him while he was shooting, so he was talking over all of the takes, basically directing the crew, directing Robert Redford, and you know, taking advantage of the fact that he was basically making a silent film to be able to coach people live, which is, you know, an opportunity that most directors don't have. So, yeah, basically we were starting with a clean slate, a completely empty palette of sound, which is a great opportunity. You know, it's really just fantastic. The small amount of dialogue I dealt with, and it was very simple to deal with.
Okay, that was Richard Himes up tonight for Best Sound Editing for All Is Lost. In a little bit, we'll close the show with a clip of our interview with Billy Ray and Hans Zimmer's Oscar music theme. It's always a treat every year. So let me ask you guys this. What are you most looking forward to seeing during tonight's telecast?
Best Picture, obviously. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm looking forward to seeing whether Sarah Jones, the film worker that recently died on set in an accident in Georgia, filming the new Greg Allman movie. We haven't talked about this on the show. That's why I'm mentioning
it. Right, no, good for you for bringing it up.
But it'll be interesting to see how somebody's going to say something about her on the show. I don't know that it'll be her name will be included in the In Memoriam segment or whatever, but somebody's going to say something about it, about her passing. So, I'm interested in seeing Bill Murray, mainly because I'm interested in seeing whether he memorializes, you know, Harold Ramis. I'm interested in all the song nominees. I'm interested in watching their performances. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was telling you that I did read something, like they interviewed someone with the Academy that remained anonymous, and he said that it's very doubtful that Sarah Jones will be included in the In Memoriam segment, that she'll just be listed on the website. So I wouldn't be surprised.
What about Harold Ramis?
I would think maybe. Probably,
but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. That's what I want to
know.
That's going to
be
very true.
Yeah. You know, and of course, our feeling is that Bette Midler's going to sing Wind Beneath My Wings during the In Memoriam segment, which will be particular eye-rolling.
I just despise that song so much, but I think you're completely right that that's what it's going to be, because, you know, it has the word hero in it, so... But that's going to be the moment that I'm not going to enjoy.
Maybe she's going to sing over the montage of movie heroes. That's another possibility.
That's possible too. So maybe that's correct. But that's just as bad.
That's not
really
a heroic song.
Hear the song.
That's not really a heroic sounding song though. That's like,
no.
That doesn't work for that. That works for In Memoriam in its theme, but you just think of Barbara Hershey dying anytime you see that, hear that song. But
I just can't. They should just stick with the established kind of standards, you know, the sort of tear jerky standards for this.
I'll tell you another thing I don't like. I don't like what they did last year, where they had the band in a completely different location.
That's weird. That's just
that was
odd.
Weird.
I agree. It's bizarre.
There is no way to avoid
a
really dislocated feeling when the band isn't there.
Where the hell is the band?
Where they know it's live and they can take the temperature of, okay, when should I come in, and they know the rhythm of the acceptance speech that's going on, or it's, I don't like it, but anyway. And how many people are they going to play off? You know, they give them 45 seconds. Like, the only really, like, potentially surprising or enjoyable thing about these ceremonies is hearing some of the nominees and their speeches, because that is actually a spontaneous moment. That's the only spontaneous moment when they're up there speak in front of a billion people.
Moment where they have control of the show and almost anything can happen, and the Oscar producers don't have any control.
No, that's right.
Yeah, that's true. So,
I'm looking forward to the opening monologue. I'm looking forward to the set, seeing what the set looked like, because I remember 2 years ago, I rewatched that. Maybe it was last year. I can't remember, but they had the most gorgeous set, and yet it was such a terrible show. But the set decoration was just incredible. And I'm looking forward to obviously a couple of the categories, but I'm not expecting any surprises. But
no, that's the thing. I mean, that's what I would want. I would love to see June Squibb win.
Right.
Yeah.
I would really love to see that. Not to begrudge the favorites in that category. I mean, everyone. That's the problem. Everyone in each of the categories, the acting categories, is extraordinary. I don't think that's the thing. And it is to be said that because everyone's so good and so tight in that regard, we have these – I mean, these are the four categories, I think, where if there's an upset, I would find that very exciting. But I just don't see it happen. To see June Squibb win.
This is a year when Harvey Weinstein is in front and center. I mean, that's another thing that makes this year weird.
Yeah.
Look, he even said he regretted – pushing August Osage County.
He came out and said that?
Yeah. Well, how can a movie that is basically just non-pornographic version of Taboo American Style be that good, okay? Come on. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's nothing going on in that movie that's as exciting as that, so come on. It is really – I mean, Julia Roberts is the standout, I think, in that movie. I mean, I actually do like her performance. I think she's very good, but overall, the movie, who else is good as Sam Shepard, even though he doesn't have much of a part? I mean, there are good performances in the movie, but it's such an Oscar-baity, obvious thing that you hate it when you see the ads and everything, but I do like Robert's performance in it. It is a good performance.
Even
Chris Cooper is good, too.
I part with you. I think August Osage County is actually a pretty good movie.
It's not a bad movie, but I mean,
staky.
It's just too
staky. But that's the worst thing I can say.
You know, you're watching a play. You know, you're watching a stage play. I mean,
it's true.
Okay, Dean. Last words on tonight.
Last words. Just have a
Make
great
famous.
Have a great time watching the show. That's all I can say. I know I will.
Are you watching it alone?
I do generally like to watch it by myself, because I like to just pay attention to all the details. And if there's even one person in the room that's talking, I get very upset. So
you want to throw a can at them?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, I'm watching
the Golden Globes is the one that's more fun to watch with a whole bunch of people, I think.
I watched the Golden Globes this year in my L.A. hotel room, and you know, which was right down the street from where they're actually taking place. And I just was disappointed that it was such a bad ceremony. But I'm watching the Oscars alone, and I generally don't like to be around people when I watch it either. That and the fact that we'll be live social media-ing the Oscars tonight.
I was thinking about that, but I might not. I think I'm just going to watch it and avoid the social media.
So you can follow us. If you don't want to be like Jerry and you actually want to follow us on social media tonight during the ceremony, you can go to facebook.com/moviegeeksunited or especially on twitter.com/moviegeeksunite.
Yeah.
And you'll hear commentary from us during the ceremony.
If I do decide to live tweet this, you're all screwed. That's all I'm saying. If I really do decide to open up that Twitter account for this, you guys
You should start a Twitter account. Debbie Downer does the Oscars. And
oh no, I mean I've already. Dude, the funny thing is, the last year I've been actively using my Twitter account, and it's embarrassing. But I might. I'm still thinking it, but I don't know. I'd rather just watch it and be without all the added voices.
Yeah, well,
my feeling is, you know, nobody's paying me or anything to live tweet the Oscars, so I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to sit back and watch it just like everybody else.
We're not getting paid. I don't know if anyone is actually getting paid.
I'm not getting paid, but I will poke in every once in a while, and I'll throw out some observations during the ceremony.
You will throw out something to us.
Tomorrow
night,
10 o'clock Eastern, we'll do our live post show, so we'll give our opinions for an hour on what transpired this evening, and that'll be fun. Guys,
and I'm going to see Coppola tomorrow, so I'll be reporting on that as well.
Okay, I want to close off with our last clip of Billy Ray, who's nominated for Best, adapted screenplay tonight for Captain Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great screenwriter. He's working right now on the last. He's working right now on The Last Tycoon as an HBO series. So that'll be interesting. Anyway, so we'll play this clip and then we'll close off with some Oscar theme music to get everybody hyped. 1 hour away, guys. Thank you so much. It's been a great time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Fun, everyone. Good night.
Have a good time. Go 12 Years a Slave. Yay. All right, see you later.
Is this your first nomination?
It is, and I have to tell you, it's something I've wanted very, very badly for a very long time. And you know, what a great tip of the cap for any writer. It's such a great feeling. But the fun of it has been muted a little bit because Tom Hanks wasn't nominated, and that just kills me. And Paul wasn't nominated, Paul Greengrass, our director. And I feel that they both really deserved it. So as much as I'm thrilled for me, I feel like my team didn't get what it deserved, and particularly those two guys didn't get what they deserved. And like I said, that took a little of the shine off it for me.